So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review, man.
One more time for old time's sake. Right there, so the whole world can see us. This ain't WCW. This ain't Monday Night Raw. This ain't SmackDown. This ain't even WWE. This, my friends, is ECW.
Welcome, everyone, to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting. And Wei, following the Hardcore Justice pay-per-view held earlier this evening from the ECW confines of the Impact Zone, EV 2.0 rose from the ashes. And I've got to say that after watching both reunion-style shows over the past couple of days, definitely a lot of contrast.
Yeah, you know what? I would say so myself, but I think a lot of people would look to the show that we just watched this evening as a show that maybe wasn't that great, but I personally thought it exceeded my expectations.
Now, did you think with the big surprise on the TNA show, should they have advertised it ahead of time?
I did not expect it at all, and when I saw that surprise, I leapt out of my seat. I couldn't believe it. Should they have announced it earlier? Yeah, they should have.
Well, we're going to go back now to June the 12th, 2005, at the Hammerstein Ballroom in Manhattan, New York, for the ECW One Night Stand pay-per-view. And later in the show, we're going to have an interview with Rob Van Dam that I conducted 1 week before this pay-per-view. We thought this time, rather than get someone right now to look back on the show, we'd go back and have someone kind of about to engage in the event. Because as everyone recalls, I think you always look back on things kind of with rose-colored glasses, that everything was great. The TV leading into that show was not blowing anyone away. Mm-hmm. They were doing a bunch of garbage matches at the time on TV, like with trash cans as ECW-style matches. There was a heavy influence to get the WWE crew on this pay-per-view and have that bit of an influence. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people were suspicious of what was going to be on this pay-per-view. Now, in hindsight, it was one of the best shows the WWE has ever produced. But it's an interesting look about 7 to 10 days before the pay-per-view when I spoke to Rob Van Dam.
Yeah, it's interesting how that happens. I mean, maybe it just says something about people's attention spans when they can, as long as your final product is good, anything before that can be shit, and people will still be okay with it.
It's like that old saying, if you give them a good beginning or a good end, they'll forget everything in the middle.
Yeah.
And that's very, very true in professional wrestling. Now, the first time, Wei, when you heard about this ECW reunion show in 2005, what were your thoughts? Did you think this was going to be a gigantic failure?
This was part of the time when I actually wasn't watching wrestling.
Oh, okay.
I stopped watching at about, say maybe like 2000, like late 2003, all the way until I started again with the Fight Network in 2005. I think around this time I was watching more, getting more into UFC. So I didn't actually hear about the show until afterwards. I mean, I'd heard about it, but I never really heard the buzz from the show until afterwards, and that's when I really sought it out to catch it. I don't know. I didn't really have too many thoughts into it. I just heard the buzz coming off of the show, and
yeah,
it actually kind of got me back into wrestling.
It was a ton of buzz coming off. And before we get into the review, we should note that during the same weekend, Shane Douglas was running his own ECW reunion-style shows. It was called Hardcore Homecoming. That weekend, it took place at the ECW Arena in Philadelphia, and a lot of guys ended up working both shows, which is kind of amazing when you consider that Vince McMahon allowed talent to work both shows.
Yeah, I had heard that Vince threatened to not allow anybody who worked the Shane Douglas show to work on the show.
There was a ton of crossover.
Oh, yeah.
And Mick Foley even showed up on the Shane Douglas show as a big surprise.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something interesting. And I believe we do have that on DVD if one day we do review that. I'd have to double check that we have it. But let's get into it. One Night Stand. We open up in the arena inside of the Hammerstein Ballroom, and Joey Styles comes out, who was not announced ahead of time, though we kind of did break it on the law in this Rob Van Dam interview where he kind of told us Styles was coming. But nonetheless, it had not been announced on television.
Could you imagine Michael Cole or even Jim Ross calling this show? Come on.
Would well, not that's the worked. Issue with the TNA show that I think a lot of people are going to have the had the problem with tonight. Joey Styles comes out, is introduced as the voice of ECW. He looked like he was about to cry here.
Oh, he almost did.
And gave a gigantic, oh my God, and then introduced his broadcast partner, Mick Foley, who came out wearing his Cactus Jack shirt. And then we go into the old ECW opening that they used for the TNN show, and Paul Heyman does the voiceover for THQ Destroy All Humans presents ECW One Night Stand. Right.
The announcer himself, like just the announcer, is receiving this type of reaction. And just from the very first moments of this pay-per-view, you can tell from the look of the show. And
it was shot with like the four cameras that ECW used to do. Like this was not a WWE production.
No.
Which was such a huge plus.
Well, it looked like an ECW show, first of all, and also reminded me of the old Monday Night Raws that used to take place in a similar venue. Or did it take place from the Hammerstein Ballroom?
No, it was at the Manhattan Center, but very close by.
But yeah, just a completely different look. And the announcer is receiving this type of reaction just to give you a sense that this is really a show that's been made by the crowd. You know, without the crowd, it would not have, obviously, like the whole ECW experience is most of it, not most of it, but like half of it is the crowd. I think it'd be tough to find any other place where an announcer would receive this type of reaction. Jim Ross, sure, but I mean like a Tony Schiavone, how many other people would receive this type of reaction?
Our first match, Lance Storm is out along with Dawn Marie, who is actually pregnant here, taking on Chris Jericho, who came out wearing his old Lionheart vest, and he was introduced as the Lionheart Chris Jericho. This was cool that they were abandoning their current WWE gimmicks, which some guys later in the show would not, and it was a negative, I thought. Foley mentioned that this could be Storm's last match, and that both Storm and Jericho had their first match together in Ponoka, Alberta, and that match is actually going to be on Chris Jericho's DVD, as he told us on the show last week. And, of course, this did not turn out to be Lance Storm's retirement match.
It was his last match on TV.
Yeah, that's true. The crowd, absolutely hot right from the start, and you knew this was going to be, I don't want to say an easy audience to perform in front of, but they were, you didn't have to win this crowd over by any stretch. Mm-hmm. They wanted everything to be great on this show. Mm-hmm. They started a She's a Crack Whore chant at Dawn Marie, which I hope the baby couldn't hear.
It's just a fun chant to chant.
Yeah. Brought back memories, I guess, for some fans. Styles brings up that ECW has been forced to use the black mats on the floor because of the New York State Athletic Commission. They were forced to put protection in for the performers. They discussed the team as the Thrill Seekers in Smoky Mountain Wrestling and Sudden Impact in Japan, which Foley noted eventually it was the name Sudden Impact which was used for the Impact players and how they came up with that name for Storm and Just Incredible. See a vertical leap by Storm to the top rope, and then he did a backwards elbow drop, but Jericho caught him with a drop kick, which looked incredibly painful, right to the back of his neck. Jericho then reversed a cradle pile driver, but then Storm hit the super kick for a two count. Storm then had a single leg crab, which Styles called the Calgary crab. And then Jericho had the Walls of Jericho on, but Jason and Just Incredible ran in to break it up. Jericho recovers with a roll up, but then Storm kicks out and Jericho takes a kendo stick shot to the head from Credible, and Storm gets the win. And we get an Impact Players reunion at the end with Jason, Credible, Storm, and Dawn Marie all together.
Yeah, it was good. Lance Storm considers this and his pretty much his goodbye to the public audience of pro wrestling.
Then we go to Styles and Foley on camera, and Foley starts breaking Styles' balls for being so emotional in the opening segment. Then they show the empty area of the arena where the WWE crew is promising to crash the pay-per-view. Then we go to Pitbull Gary Wolf, who introduces a dedication piece for talent that has died on the ECW roster. They show Rocco Rock, Terry Gordy, Mike Lockwood, who you would remember better as Crash Holly, who was in ECW very, very briefly. The original Sheik, because of the attachment to Rob Van Dam and Sabu. Mike Lazansky, Anthony Durante, who was Pitbull number one. Big Dick Dudley, and Chris Candido, who had just died a few weeks before this show. And mm-hmm. this ended in a big Candido chant. And they actually did chant Candido during the opening match because of... his connection there to Lance Storm as they teamed together in ECW. So a number of guys were left out of here, but...
A number of guys in those years, or you mean since the years?
No, even then. I mean, like, Louis Spicoli was in there that worked for ECW.
Weren't they just mentioning the guys that had passed away since 2001 when ECW
went away. Yeah, that makes sense.
But in the 5 years' time since this show, the list has grown considerably larger.
Yes, with even some guys on this very show.
Yeah, you got Bam Bam Bigelow, Chris Benoit, Eddie, of course,
Mike
Johnny
Awesome.
Grunge, Mike Awesome, John Cronus. No one on this list is older than 45.
That's insane. Outside of the original Sheik. And then we go to Tajiri, who came out with Mikey Whipwreck and the Sinister Minister to take on Little Guido, who was accompanied by JT Smith, Tracy Smothers, Tony Mamaluke, and Big Guido, who brought Little Guido out on his shoulders. And then Super
Not
Crazy.
Not Nunzio, but Little Guido.
It yes.
I think it was incredibly ballsy of the WWF to just let their current characters appear on another one of their own TV shows under... different characters, at least character names.
So we have an international three-way here. Foley says right at the start that he won't be able to call much in the inside of this match, leaving most of it to Joey Styles, a very honest announcer. They start in the ring but quickly made their way to the audience, and there we see Vladimir the Superfan in the front row. Did you catch him?
No, I didn't.
He was there. We see a crazy balcony dive by Super Crazy onto the FBI. This had to have been 12 feet in the air. Tajiri and Crazy are then in the ring with Tajiri applying the tarantula. Then Big Guido gets into the ring, attempts to powerbomb Tajiri, but he hits Little Guido with mist. And then the Sinister Minister comes in to deliver a low blow to Big Guido. And this was a terrible, terrible spot as Big Guido tried to sell this very badly. Delivered low blow. Whipwreck then hits the whippersnapper. Tajiri pins Guido for an elimination. They did mention at the beginning that it's not first pinfall wins. You'd have to eliminate both guys. So we're down to Tajiri and Crazy. Whipwreck stops Crazy from hitting his triple rope moonsault, but about a minute later does hit the moonsault for the win, which I thought came across as a flat ending as they kind of just went to the finish following a "you fucked up" chant.
Yeah, there was some missed timing following Tajiri's missed buzzsaw kick, and it was a little bit awkward. And overall, the match itself, it was
rushed.
Yeah, it was kind of a sense you would see from all these matches. They weren't really great matches. They were just mainly spot fest for everyone to see their favorite characters, see all the big run-ins and just see all the big finishing moves.
Yeah, you were trying to work a lot of guys into this match. Not a horrible match. It was just...
No, not at all.
It was two falls rushed into 7 minutes. And
basically, at the end, what do you remember from it? You remember Super Crazy's dive. You remember the FBI walking out. And that's all you really need for a show like this.
They show a replay of the balcony dive, and Foley says he's never seen anything like that. And coming from Mick Foley, a guy who has dove off a cage,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, he hasn't seen it himself.
I guess Mick Foley never did a moonsault off of a balcony. Then we get a segment looking back at past ECW memories. They focus on Shane Douglas, Public Enemy, the Sandman, Sabu, Tommy Dreamer, the spot where all the chairs were thrown in the ring by the audience, which is, you can blame this promotion for designing that spot, which maybe it's great to watch on TV, but wait, you and I have been to a show where fans started to do this,
and I
was scared out of my mind.
And we were standing at the very back.
Oh, this one woman took a chair to the back of the head was thrown, and it's...
This was an ROH show back in Chicago. Like,
it was Homicide and Colt Cabana in Chicago. they show Terry Funk with a flaming branding iron. Shane Douglas throwing down the NWA title and the Public Enemy house party where the ring collapses after they invited all the fans into the ring. Next up, we have Psychosis taking on Rey Mysterio, who comes out to his WWE theme.
Yeah.
This was not a good idea, as we will find out later.
This was a match that we reviewed last week.
That's true, on the Bash at the Beach show. And yeah. The first time I ever saw these two was the 95 Best of the Super Juniors tournament, where they had a phenomenal match. Psychosis gets into the ring, and he takes his masks off. He takes his mask off, which is the first time he has ever done this in an ECW arena.
Yeah.
As we mentioned, Mysterio, with his WWE theme, did not unmask.
The whole taking of the mask off thing, Mick Foley has a bit of a... is a little confused. He thought that that was the first time Psychosis had taken his mask off in North America, which
no,
was not the case.
No, that was not the case. It was the first time in ECW.
It wasn't really an unmasking. He just came out with the mask as a gimmick and then took it off.
He was not a very pleasant-looking fellow. I'm just going to point out.
There's a reason for a mask. Most of the masked guys aren't. Like, name a masked guy who is actually...
Well, Rey Mysterio looks like a normal
person. No, he does
person.
Not.
He looks like a child, but he looks like a normal child.
All those guys shouldn't. They have a mask for a reason. I have a good feeling, like, you know, Liger, for instance, shouldn't never, ever, like, he's probably hideous underneath his mask.
Early on, Psychosis botches something, and the crowd really wants to call him on it, but they forgive him. This was a forgiving crowd. Early near falls by both. Then the crowd turned somewhat on Psychosis with a chant of "put the mask on." The crowd booed when Psychosis applied a sleeper hold. They wanted none of that rest spot shit. Mysterio was draped on the guardrail on the floor, and Psychosis hit a top rope guillotine leg drop to the floor. I thought he was dead.
It looked awesome.
Holy crap. This was just an unbelievable move for a guy to pull off, and how he didn't severely injure himself is beyond me.
I'm sure he's done it many times.
I'm very happy.
A psycho guillotine.
I'm very happy he had a WWE contract coming out of this show. Psychosis missed a shoulder block, goes into the steel post, and then ends up inside the crowd. Mysterio then gets to the top rope and hit a seated senton off of the top rope into the crowd, which is a very impressive move. Then he hit the 619, which was the worst call he made of the night. He was booed out of the building for pulling off that move, and then hit a West Coast pop for the win. This match was clear they were not fans of the WWE version of any of these characters.
Yes.
And Rey Mysterio, I'm sure, learned that lesson after this match. I don't want to say this was a bad match, because there were some good spots in this match. I think people, though, you see on paper, Psychosis, Rey Mysterio, mm-hmm. there's a very, very high standard in
yes.
mind.
A very different match from their 1996 bout that we reviewed last week. It was not as good. It was slower. These guys are a bit older. Rey Mysterio is a lot bigger now, both in terms of fan base and muscle mass. And it was more WWE style, but as a wrestling match, it was still good. Just not up to their standards, like you said.
Then the SmackDown crew shows up. Among them, Kurt Angle, JBL, Orlando Jordan, the Basham Brothers, Rob Conway, Carlito. And they are met with chants of "you suck dick" and "fuck you, SmackDown." JBL looked like he was in heaven during this. Like the heat he was receiving. And then he pulled out a ticket and yelled down to Rey Mysterio in the ring, "I have a ticket, you little Mexican."
It was at this point.
I love JBL.
He was very good here.
He was so good.
It was at this point when I was able to watch this on the DVD, and it was at this point that I switched the commentary to listen to JBL.
Oh, so he does commentary for the whole show.
He does throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, we should mention, everyone, that I watched the VHS of the original pay-per-view broadcast, and Way watched the DVD, so we could contrast any editing changes they made, and you also got to catch the JBL commentary, which I've never heard.
You've never? JBL is mic'd the entire time, and these fans are so hostile, but JBL just...
Is he
wearing a lab of some sort.
Oh, so it's not done in post.
No.
Oh, it was a live
mic?
Oh,
yeah, dude.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, you gotta go back and listen to this.
I thought he did it in post.
No, 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 no. This was him as he was progressively getting more and more drunk throughout the evening.
Like, they were all drinking legit beer.
Oh, yeah.
Throughout this whole show.
Oh, you can hear JBL call for beer throughout. And we'll get to some of his gems. Oh, I thought it was an excellent. Worth grabbing the DVD, even though they edit out the, you know, some of the music and all that. Worth grabbing the DVD just for this JBL commentary track.
That's cool. Then we go backstage to Roadkill, who's interrupted by Danny Doring, and they have some technical issue on the pay-per-view where all of a sudden it goes to the viewer's choice screen, and then we cut back, and the SmackDown talent, they're on the SmackDown talent. So this was very strange. Hmm. And then all of a sudden they went to an ECW video package. They show the Dudley Boys doing their stuttering gimmick, Benoit powerbombing Sabu off the top rope through a table. They showed 9-1-1 choke-slamming Bill Alfonso, Austin doing his Eric Bischoff impression, Sandman with the Singapore cane, Dreamer with the infamous chair shot to Raven as he was chained up on the cage, looking like he was on a cross, Jerry Lawler doing the WWF invasion angle, Benoit breaking the neck of Sabu, RVD refusing to shake the hand of Sabu, and then we had the start of the Taz Shane Douglas program, which led to Taz winning the ECW title for the first time. Among the highlights,
you can hear JBL's comments throughout the entire thing, during these video packages. And JBL at this point is either sitting next to Kurt Angle and Orlando Jordan. One of the two, you can hear, asks him, "Who is this guy?" When they're looking at Shane Douglas versus Taz, and JBL says, "Shane Douglas, he looks tall because he's next to Taz, who's 5'3". Like these were, I don't know if JBL was actually. He was probably playing it up to an extent, but I don't even know if he realized for a lot of it that he was being recorded or how this audio commentary would eventually be used. It just it was very entertaining to hear. They're kind of candid, some of these comments.
They come back, and Joel Gertner shows up in the SmackDown area and does his rhyme gimmick, but he's cut off by Angle taking the mic, and JBL just beats the shit out of Gertner. Angle then cuts a promo on ECW fans. They chanted him, "You suck dick," and Angle says, "Your mother showed me how."
A classic line.
Oh.
Angle admitting he sucks dick.
Yes. And he says, "Last time he was at an ECW show, it was humiliating." And then he hands the mic to JBL, who gets chance of asshole. JBL says Madison Square Garden is a block away, and if you put his name on the marquee, it sells out, and that ECW can barely fill a bingo hall, and cuts a promo on internet fans who email each other saying, "I'm hardcore," and then their friend replies saying, "No, I'm hardcore." This was fantastic.
Excellent.
He then cut a promo on the guys who go into the ring and mutilate themselves, which is all ECW is. And for whatever reason, this causes Kurt Angle to take his shirt off, and it stayed off for the entire rest of the show. Angle watched this show topless. JBL says the only reason this pay-per-view may do well is because JBL is here and not because of the crap in the ring. I thought this was a great promo. And then they're interrupted by Rob Van Dam, who comes out with Bill Alfonso. He's wearing a knee brace, as he had been out since February and couldn't wrestle on this show. Van Dam cut what might have been the best promo of his entire career, saying that no one wanted to see the WWE guys and their likeness shoved down their throats, and that they showed up to steal some of the cred of the popularity of this show, even if The Office doesn't know this. He states there were no creative geniuses writing his script, and he will go back, and then reminds Alfonso prior to his vocabulary consisting of the words as just cool and whatever. I could not believe I was hearing this promo on a WWE
neither.
Show as they shit on the WWE creative team. This was okayed by the WWE and basically
Was it okayed?
The WWE pretty much said, "You guys put this show together."
But did they know that Rob Van Dam was going to say all these things at the time?
I have to imagine it was all, like, all the Heyman stuff was approved ahead of time. So I imagine this had to have
Was
as well.
All of it approved ahead of time? Because I heard that he, we'll get to it later on, but I heard that the Edge thing was mentioned to Edge beforehand, but I heard his comments about JBL and Triple H were not mentioned to Vince beforehand.
RVD brings up how he tore his ACL and MCL. He had to miss his good friend Booker T's wedding. He had to miss WrestleMania. But most importantly, he can't wrestle on this show. You've buried the creative team. You've put this show ahead of the WWE's staple show every year.
Yeah.
This was just amazing.
Yeah. It is a completely different viewing watching this promo with and without JBL's commentary. When you watch it with just RVD, it comes across as a very emotional, heartfelt speech. But when you watch it with JBL,
he just buries it.
It makes RVD look like a rambling idiot. When RVD says, I don't have anyone writing my scripts tonight. JBL says, we can tell. We can tell you're not reading from your script because you suck as much as you're wrestling. And RVD says, and then I have to get a surgery. And JBL's like, wham, 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 call the ambulance. Then he proceeds to cry through the rest of the promo. It's funny either way. Good viewing either way. I recommend watching it both times. It's funny.
Van Damme is then attacked by Rhino, and the lights go off, and Sabu appears in the ring, and this leads to our impromptu match between Rhino and Sabu. They mention that Rhino was the final ECW champion and won the title in this building. Sabu has a chair that's thrown into Rhino to knock him to the floor, and then hits a springboard to the floor by Sabu off of the chair.
At this point, I'm really just paying attention to JBL's commentary about Sabu when he enters. JBL says, the Iron Sheik's lost weight.
Oh, jeez.
And every time they do an unprotected chair shot, JBL's just like, talent. Nothing but talent.
Oh, my God. I have a feeling I would totally view this show in a different light with JBL's commentary. We see a top rope thrown by Sabu. Alfonso throws a chair in for Sabu, who runs off the chair into Rhino into the corner. Then a drop toehold by Rhino to Sabu into the chair Sabu goes face first into. Rhino then attempts a gore but hits the referee instead, and then a pile driver to Sabu. We then see RVD get into the ring and throw a chair to the face of Rhino, and then a running drop kick into the chair into Rhino. Then they set up a table and put Rhino on the table, and Sabu hits the Arabian Skull Crusher onto Rhino, onto the table, and gets the win. Sabu seemed pissed after this match as he shoved Bill Alfonso on his way to the back, and then he knocked a fan's sign away from him. So Sabu was pissed about something, but Sabu got the win here.
Mm-hmm.
Any gems from JBL during this match?
Well, not so much JBL, but Orlando Jordan. If you guys remember, Orlando Jordan was doing the whole gimmick with JBL at the time. And it's just so uncomfortable hearing him try to trade wit with JBL. He tries to get his little lines here and there, because you can hear him sitting next to JBL talking to him. But he just comes across so lame. Some of the things he says... Is it just me, or does Rhino look like a large midget? Why don't you try to hit him with a kitchen sink? He might stay down.
Those are horrible. We go backstage. Al Snow is with Head, and Snow blames Head for the WWE crew showing up, and Head apparently called them, and then they throw to some more ECW memories. We see the Blue World Order. We see the Taz versus Bam Bam Bigelow spot where they go through the ring. The Sandman angle with his son Tyler. Then we see Dreamer against Brian Lee. Taz tapping out 911, and the eventual feud between Taz and Sabu, which led into their barely legal pay-per-view. Then Team Raw shows up, way, consisting of Eric Bischoff, Edge Christian, Jonathan Coachman, Gene Snitsky, William Regal, Tomko. Fans tell Bischoff, fuck you, and... One fan gets right in his face and says this, and Bischoff says, no, fuck you, buddy. And then a fan threw a soda at him. And
no, he sprays beer from his mouth.
Oh, was that what it was?
And I can't believe they didn't just jump on this guy and kick him out.
Fuck you, buddy.
The people in attendance here, wow. Like, if I was one of the Raw guys, I would actually... You would probably be pretty nervous walking up there, because these fans were hostile.
You know what? These performers, the ones that have followed the business for a long time, would be craving this kind of reaction from fans. Big deal. You get beer spilt on you. It was heat. It's good. Yes. Then we go to Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero, and Styles mentions how Benoit versus Guerrero was the match that Paul Heyman always wanted to promote but never got a chance to inside of ECW, and this was the first time these two were meeting since each won their versions of the WWE title in 2004. So this would have been a year and a half after each won their titles. This match was somewhat hurt, I found, by the WWE crew, because throughout the match we got chance of Lita's Got Herpes, which I imagine were sent to Edge, as well as You Screwed Matt. And I thought this did take away from the match a bit.
I mean, it was hurt by the audience, not necessarily the WWE crew.
Well, it's just the focus was now on the Raw group. Like, you had all these, you know, quote-unquote stars just in the audience that you're kind of dividing the attention concerning. Guerrero was bleeding from the bridge of the nose early on, and that would consist of the entire match. Guerrero, I don't know what it was, but he just presented this look of, I do not want to be here.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't
neither
know.
Of these guys, like, did anything to separate themselves from their WWE characters. Each came out to their new theme songs. Eddie just looked like he just did not want to be here.
He looked pissed, especially after the matchup. He was arguing with Benoit, it looked like. And you have to figure maybe part of the crowd's reaction kind of affected him. The crowd, like you said, was not really paying attention to these two, basically these two guys who are probably the best at what they do in the company at the time, not paying attention to their match, but paying attention to making, you know, Lita
herpes jokes.
And then, yeah, that's it.
Guerrero hit a superplex off of the top rope, but then missed a frog splash. Benoit hit three German suplexes and a diving headbutt from the top, which Foley noted after his neck surgery. Benoit said he would never do that move again, but he's doing it. And then he applied a crossface. Guerrero lasted in the crossface for a long while before tapping out. And as you mentioned, Wei, the two apparently off camera had a gigantic argument inside of the ring. And Eddie did not come back for the final segment at the end of the night. So Eddie apparently left the arena after this. I'll say this was somewhat disappointing.
Yeah,
this was
absolutely.
You had very high expectations, and I don't want to say that neither guy were trying. They clearly were, but Eddie especially brought this match down.
Yeah. For me, I mean, I think it was good that they put this match on this show, but to me, Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit are not two names I necessarily associate with ECW. If anything, I associate those two more with WCW.
Mm-hmm. Then, in the middle of this whole thing, we get a promo for WWE Vengeance with Batista against Triple H in a Hell in a Cell match, and this just seems so out of place and so uninteresting in comparison to what was going on here. Joel Gertner returns to the Raw area and asks Eric Bischoff, who's drinking a beer, on behalf of every ECW fan and talent, can I please have a job? He says he can announce, he can get coffee, anything he wants. And Bischoff responds, hell no, I won't hire you. And cuts a promo on ECW Geeks. Doesn't want to see anyone at a Raw show. And then he asks Gertner to hold his beer, and then he knocks the beer into Gertner.
JBL, upon seeing Joel Gertner, he comments, he's the least heterosexual guy I've ever seen. Meanwhile, he's saying this to Orlando Jordan.
Yes, that is quite the statement right there, and a very equal opportunity employers are the WWE. Then we go to Mike Awesome versus Masato Tanaka. This is a match that you clearly identify with ECW through, as well
yes,
as FMW.
Absolutely.
These two folks, if you did not see, they had a series of matches at the end of 1999 on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. And these were two of my favorite matches in ECW when I was like younger. I remember on Christmas Eve being home and watching ECW on TNN with this match and just being blown away. It was 2 weeks straight of these two matches, and they were phenomenal. Awesome comes out, and Joey Styles just goes mental on Mike Awesome for ditching ECW for WCW in 2000, for leaving with the title. Now, some background on this is that when Bischoff and Vince Russo were brought back into WCW together, they were doing their first show together in April of 2000, and they wanted, of course, a big surprise that they wouldn't announce ahead of time. And they were able to sign Mike Awesome, and they wanted him to show up with the ECW title. They gave him a contract. It was for $1 million over 3 years.
It's amazing.
$1 million for 3 years for Mike Awesome, who would be making over $300,000 a year.
He would be an idiot not to take it.
And they were not able to get Awesome to bring the title onto Nitro and throw it in the garbage, which is what they wanted. There was actually an injunction, and Awesome had to go back and drop the title in ECW. But this, in WCW's stupidity, I mean, to you, in ECW, considering the roster and everything, what was it about Mike Awesome that stood out in your
estimation? He was the champion. He had the belt.
He was the champion. But
yeah,
he was also, I think, the biggest guy. Like, his size was a big thing in ECW to me. Like, he towered over these guys. And on his first night on Nitro, he gets punked out by Kevin Nash in the ring.
Wow.
What did you spend all this money on? It was like they killed him in one night. Idiots.
Well, they killed him again on multiple occasions.
Wow. They bring up those gimmicks later on. This is where...
JBL brings it up too, actually.
Oh, great. I don't know how much of this was Joey Styles, and because he did have Paul Heyman in his ear throughout this show. It wasn't Vince doing any of the producing here, but Styles just would not stop on Mike Awesome for being a turncoat, for being a Judas, to the point that Foley was like, okay, shut up. You're really hurting this match now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was just really annoying.
Mm-hmm.
The worst part of this match was Awesome hit a suicide dive. And Styles says it's a shame he wasn't successful in taking his own life. And, of course, Mike Awesome actually did commit suicide in 2009. This was probably the most uncomfortable moment I have ever experienced in a wrestling match. I understand Joey Styles was not aware that this would eventually happen 4 years later, but nonetheless, a very tasteless comment, and now in contrast, a just horribly, horribly tasteless comment.
Yeah, very tasteless at the time, but who would have known? Really, who would have known? He probably really regrets it.
This was just, I don't know, very uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the spots in this match were just insane. We see a running Awesome Bomb. This more so than that three-way way, was just, this was spots.
Yeah.
This was holy shit spots to build up drama. We see a running Awesome Bomb by Mike Awesome to Masato Tanaka off of the apron and through a table on the floor. We see Awesome hit an Awesome Splash off the top rope for a two count. Then both got dueling chairs. Tanaka takes three shots to the head where he no-sold the first two. Tanaka then comes back with the Diamond Dust maneuver and then a tornado DDT onto Awesome on top of the chairs. And then Awesome gets a table but has problems getting it into the ring and the fans chant, "You fucked up and you suck." This is when Styles and Foley bring up that 70s guy gimmick and the fat chick thriller gimmick he had in WCW in 2000. Two winners. Tanaka reverses a DDT on Awesome off through the top onto a table. Foley, at this point, was again trying to tell Styles to calm down about his bias towards Awesome. We see a top rope Awesome Bomb by Tanaka, who kicks out at two. Crowd was super into this match. You can pick apart the psychology in this match or that it was just garbage style, but the crowd, this is the match they wanted.
Yeah.
We see a power bomb by Awesome over the top rope through a table. Over the top rope through a table, and then delivers a tope onto Tanaka on the floor for the win. Gets the pin on the floor. Foley notes that Awesome was booked terribly in WCW, and tonight was redemption for his terrible booking. And then, as just a bit of a receipt for Joey Styles, said that he too probably would have sold out for that amount of money if it had come his way.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you could tell that Foley, I think, was really annoyed at Styles. And this is one example I thought of an announcer really trying to hinder a match.
Mm-hmm.
This was Mike Awesome's, like, this could very well be his most well-known performance in North America.
Could be.
And actually was not hired as a result of this at all. But this kind of style, there is no way he could do this in WWE.
No. And you could probably imagine Vince in the back, you know, thinking that he, you know, this might be going a bit too far. It just looked like they, Mike Awesome and Tanaka, those two guys weren't really thinking twice about each other's safety. Mike Awesome especially, just tossing Tanaka, you know, here and there and throughout the entire ring.
If you like just watching violent, legitimately painful shit, then this was your match. If you're of the belief that pro wrestling is a work where it should look real with both guys being fine after the match, then this was terrible. It just depends on what your tastes are.
Yeah.
For these two, this was the style of match that the fans wanted from them, and it's not always my cup of tea, but a lot of people, this is what they wanted to see.
For me, at least, it was the match of the night.
Agreed.
In terms of crowd heat, in terms of the spots are very impressive to see, no doubt.
On a show where there were a lot of matches that I thought underperformed, this one overachieved.
Yes, absolutely.
Because these guys were that much older, that much more broken down, and they used a lot of shortcuts in this match, but this crowd was insane by the end of it.
Oh, yeah.
Then we go to Paul Heyman, who came to the ring. He bows to the audience. This was probably the most emotional part of the entire show. He thanks the fans. He thanks Todd Gordon, and then points to Ron Buffone and Charlie Brazees, who helped edit the show for him back in the day, where they would spend hours in a basement editing the ECW Hardcore show. Then he states that he was going to take the high road, but then decides to cut promos. First, he rips on Eric Bischoff, saying that it's not him with his tail between his legs showing at a WCW reunion show. Then he says, "Hide your wives, it's Edge," and says he has two words for him that no one with a scripted promo would have the balls to say, and responds, "Matt freaking Hardy," which the WWE crew is quick to point out were three words and not two. And then tells JBL that the only reason he was the champion for a year on SmackDown was because Triple H didn't want to work on Tuesdays. And this, all of these comments got a big, big pop from the crowd, who just liked him shooting. And I liked as they showed the WWE crew that Carlito was just standing there with a half-eaten apple, which I imagine he was
holding the entire night.
Holding the whole night. So Heyman ends with a promo stating that this isn't WCW, it's not Raw, it's not SmackDown, and it's not even WWE. This is EC fucking W.
Heyman, Paul Heyman, I mean, just in my, one of my favorite public speakers in the world, period. He can convince an audience to do anything.
Fantastic. Then we get a promo that airs for The Devil's Rejects, which is a Rob Zombie film, which seemed like an odd placement. And then we go to the main event, Way. It's the Dudley Boys against Tommy Dreamer and the Sandman. And on my version I watched, Sandman did come out to enter Sandman, and this entrance was awesome. Like, it was 5 minutes of this crowd going mental, mm-hmm. singing all the words to the songs.
I'm sure much of the audience was concerned that the WWE wouldn't be able to get the rights to enter Sandman, but they did pay for it. It was, of course, edited off of the DVD afterwards.
Which, if you look at UFC DVDs, they do the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's for one time only, it's not that pricey to use music. If anything, actually, for a company on pay-per-view. But if you're putting it on your DVD and selling it, yeah. that's a whole different can of worms.
Oh, so even on the UFC DVDs, they cut out the entrance themes?
They typically, like if you watch like Unleashed or whatever, they'll always cut out entrances all the time.
But on the DVD itself, like a DVD?
I think so, yeah.
Wow, that's a lot of editing.
The Dudley Boys... then come out. We see Chris Chetty and C.W. Anderson in the front row alongside Elektra. The Sandman and Dreamer drink beer off of Elektra's chest.
JBL and Orlando Jordan laugh at the fact that Tommy Dreamer, a curtain jerker, is the main event.
Great. Glad these guys were not the actual commentators. Before the match starts, the Blue World Order comes out. Stevie Richards, Blue Meanie, and Nova. And Styles just has the fakest laugh ever with these three.
Immediately, once the Blue Meanie enters, you can hear JBL target his hatred towards him, yelling at him from his seat about his porn star wife, calls him an 800-pound Abraham Lincoln. And if you're watching this and you don't know what's about to happen after, you have to wonder why, out of all the people in the ring, he would focus so much of his attention on the Blue Meanie.
Well, these two had prior problems heading into the show, and they would come to a head. Stevie Richards cuts a promo and then super kicks Dreamer. Then Kid Cash runs in, who Styles calls Mr. TNA, total nonstop attitude.
He just didn't give a shit.
No.
Joey Styles in this match.
No. This whole show, he went in with the impression it's going to be one and done for the WWE with me.
And you know what's interesting? Look at all the guys on this card.
And he's the only guy left. He's the only guy left, Joey Styles. Amazing. Balls Mahoney and Axel Rotten then come out with chairs. Mahoney and Rotten take out Nova with the chairs. Cash then uses Jim Molyneux's back to jump and delivers a helo over the top rope onto all of the ECW guys. Then the match finally starts. Bubba right away uses a cheese grater on Tommy Dreamer, who is bleeding buckets here. Sandman hits a somersault off the top onto a ladder, which is on top of D-Von. And then Bubba takes out Sandman with a vicious chair shot to the head. We see a splash by Bubba off the second rope onto Sandman, who is on top of a ladder. Then the Impact players run in to attack Dreamer and Sandman with Credible hitting Sandman with That's Incredible on top of the barbed wire ball. Then Francine comes in and low blows Dreamer. You know, when you read back, this seems incredibly overbooked.
Yeah.
But they were
again, like,
this is all nostalgia pops.
Yes, it is all about the entrances and all about seeing your old characters. It's just like it's any other reunion show.
Like everyone got a pop on this show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Francine comes in, low blows Dreamer, and then Beulah, who's Tommy Dreamer's wife, gets in, and we get the cat fight spot for Styles' trademark call. The Impact players are knocked to the floor. Then Dreamer and Beulah embrace in the ring, deliver a double DDT spot to the Dudleys for a near fall. Beulah's DDT to Bubba? Ugh.
They missed it, and they tried their best to edit it on the DVD,
but
you can still tell.
It looked bad.
Yeah.
Then the Dudleys powerbomb Sandman through a table. Then Dreamer's in with a Singapore cane, but the Dudleys hit a 3D on Dreamer. This leads to the Dudleys bringing in a new table, and then Spike Dudley comes out with lighter fluid, and then they powerbomb Dreamer through a flaming table, and Bubba pins Dreamer for the win. Then Dudleys drag in Beulah, but Sandman attacks them with cane shots. So the Dudleys get the win here. You got your flaming table spot, and we thought that would be the end of the pay-per-view, but then Steve Austin's music hits for the surprise appearance on the show. He's wearing a Las Vegas Outlaws XFL jersey, which Styles even brings up, saying he isn't even crazy enough to make a joke about what he's wearing. He calls out the entire ECW roster, and then Austin challenges the WWE guys to come fight ECW after all the shit they've been talking, or else Austin's going to go up there and beat all of the WWE guys up. This leads to Taz entering to a big pop at the entrance.
In an ideal world, I think Taz should have been the one in the main event. But you could see from here, he looks visibly out of shape, wearing his big, Taz baseball jersey.
And now he's even bigger.
Yeah.
Bischoff comes on to commentary, and Styles just destroys Bischoff on this commentary. He calls him the worst play-by-play man in history, and he ran WCW into the ground, and Bischoff had no comeback.
I'm so, like, in hindsight, I'm so happy Bischoff had that run in the WWE just for moments like these. So many moments where you had him air out his grievances, or other people air out their grievances with him for things over the years. It was fantastic.
Then the ECW and WWE guys all start fighting in the ring, and this is where the JBL Blue Meanie shoot occurs. It's really hard to see this on the DVD, but it's like also very obvious that every guy in the ring is working with the other guy, except for JBL, who is throwing these wild punches at the Blue Meanie.
Yeah. What's the backstory on this, John?
I think it was just they were both in the WWF together in 99, and I think Meanie was either roughed up in a match with them. Yeah. Like, the APA were notorious for just roughing guys up. They did that with Public Enemy, and I think the Meanie was the recipient of that. And apparently Meanie just did a bunch of interviews kind of talking about JBL and stuff, and here you had a loaded JBL, which it was irresponsible enough that you were giving these guys beer right before a big angle. Like, you would have known better listening to this. Was he not hammered by the time he was going out to perform? He was still performing.
He sounded like it. And even on camera, you could see him. You could see his face. The Blue Meanie, of course, he wrestled on the Hardcore Homecoming show beforehand. And so he had some stitches from the previous night. JBL and his attack pretty much opened up these cuts.
Yeah, he was all bleeding after.
And actually, after the show, there was a lot of controversy. And Blue Meanie posted the following on his MySpace. He pretty much runs down the whole event. Do you want me to get
into it? For it.
So, once the WWE ECW brawl started, I paired off with the coach, and I felt a punch come out from nowhere. My first instinct was to hit back, but I also had the issue of trying to protect the 14 staples I have in my head. I got some rib shots in the best I could, but he got the upper hand with going to my face, opening a fresh wound on my forehead and swelling my eye. All I saw was red as the blood filled my eyes, and I believe it was Maven I pulled on top of me to get him to choke me. After he got cleared out, the guys came up to check on me, and we went on the other deal with Austin and Bischoff and the big post-brawl party in the ring. As fucked up as what Bradshaw did, the crowd reaction had me so buzzed that I didn't feel anything. I got back, and Bradshaw was in part of the gorilla position. He came over like he was going to do something else, but people got in between. He was yelling about me, talking about him on the internet. The rest of what he said I didn't hear because I was too busy saying, yo, it's a work, and dude, this is a business. This business is a fucking work. So I did my best. So I did the best thing anyone could ever do in the situation and just walked away. I got stitched up and said my goodbyes. A lot of the guys were pissed and asked what happened. When I told them, they were pissed even more. We got home and all I have been doing is popping Aleve and icing my face and reflecting. All this happened over was me calling him a bully. Well, John, you just proved me right.
And I believe, I could be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure later that summer, they brought the Blue Meanie in for like one SmackDown taping, and he beat Bradshaw, didn't he?
They signed him to a contract afterwards, and they re...
I think he made one appearance on TV, didn't he?
Didn't they regroup the BWO for a time? I think it was more than that once.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, he was there a lot. It was a short time, though.
They were... I
think that was their way of avoiding any losses.
Yeah, yeah. They had the Blue Meanie go over JBL.
That's right. They did have the Blue World Order. Continuing on that segment, Taz chokes out Kurt Angle on the floor. Foley says, tonight was full of something WCW was devoid of, emotion, to Bischoff's face. ECW then clears the ring. JBL has blood all over his shirt. Styles then says he never came to work for WCW because he didn't answer Bischoff's 8 phone calls. And actually, Styles was about to be the play-by-play guy for WCW when Bischoff thought he was buying the company in 2001 with Fuchsiant Media. Austin then instructs Foley to bring Bischoff into the ring. Sandman looks so drunk here right after his match. Bischoff then takes a 3D. He takes a diving headbutt from Benoit. He takes a 619 from Rey Mysterio. And then Austin asks for Bischoff's thoughts on the night. And Bischoff says, fuck ECW. And then takes a stunner. 3D takes him out of the arena, puts him on a production truck. And then it ends with Austin and Sandman at the entrance with his arms raised, and Styles yells, ECW lives.
A great visual, seeing Austin and Sandman together, two, you know, very similar characters. Austin based on the Sandman character, some would say. And just a very good visual to end the night. You can kind of tell, though, Austin was very unfamiliar with most of these ECW guys, especially when he goes to, you know, his old standbys for the final finishers on, like, the Dudleys. Benoit even calls for Ray to do the 619, which if he was watching his match earlier, probably shouldn't have done.
No. I didn't. I was kind of mixed on the WWE guys being involved on this show. I don't know if it was necessary, but I guess you wanted to have heels on this show for something. I don't know. The last segment to me, sure, it was fine. I don't know.
I think in hindsight... It worked out well. I think it worked out well having those guys, especially the interaction between the audience and you know, guys like JBL, Eric Bischoff. I think it was all right.
It was a very good show. I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10. I thought this was, for what it was, a nostalgia show.
Yeah.
It more than delivered, and people were super, super happy with this show.
Oh, yeah.
A few minor issues to the show, but overall, giving this one a 9.
Yeah, I mean, even though you can't look at this show and think about any classic matches, you know what? Arguably, Masato Tanaka and Mike Awesome, that could have been a classic match very much for both of those guys' careers. Just the emotion on the DVD and in the building that night is just something incredible. And to me, it's just an example of just how powerful nostalgia is in wrestling. There wasn't one flat segment the entire night. Crowd was incredible. Definitely in hindsight, the way ECW should have ended, I give it 10 out of 10.
I almost wish after watching this was the end. And for everyone that criticizes the WWE's changes made to ECW, there's no way you could do this on a weekly basis.
No.
Like, no guys, like, look at some of the guys and the shape they're in today from what they put themselves through. Mm-hmm. And that was working a handful of dates a month.
Mm-hmm.
You do that every week, A, it's burnout. B, you're basically... bringing the other Raw and SmackDown product, you're almost making them have to work to your level now because you're doing all this hot-shotting. And ECW, I think, and Heyman has always tried to emphasize this, it wasn't about necessarily chair shots and blood and barbed wire. It was about just being a progressive company and providing something new.
Mm-hmm.
Today's ECW in that philosophy would be completely different with an in-ring product. I think that was the thing I think a lot of people mistake ECW with. It's just, oh, they just went for the cheap shit with blood and shortcuts. But it was also creating something new and different. Yes. And if Heyman was doing that today, I think your ECW would reflect something like of a shoot style or something,
I think,
a progressive style, I something think, new that's not going back in time like other products.
I think the ECW of today would be Ring of Honor, a promotion like Ring of Honor, one that is very different from the current WWE product.
Mm-hmm.
And one with a crowd that's maybe just as cult-like and just as passionate about pro wrestling. And that's really what separates the ECW crowd from everything else. It's just the passion in there. It's a very good show.
So right now we're going to go to our interview with Rob Van Dam. As I said, this was conducted a week before the One Night Stand pay-per-view, where there were lots of rumors going around consisting of what was going to be on this show. For those that were not aware, it was RVD, as he states, that pitched this idea to Vince McMahon. So we'll go back here, June of 2005, where I'm chatting with Rob Van Dam.
We're going to move over to the ECW pay-per-view coming up. Now, originally we heard it was kind of, you know, a collaboration, you and Paul Heyman, that pitched it to The Office. Is that accurate?
That's about 50% accurate. Take Paul out of the equation.
Oh, really?
Yes, it was completely 100% my idea. I was talking to Vince about it, and I figured there must be some reason that he didn't want to do it. And I was so surprised to hear that he hadn't even thought of doing it yet that I just got so excited and told him, this is why you have to do it, man. We've got the most passionate fans. ECW wrestlers are the toughest guys you got in your dressing room. Just give us one night. I told him, one night only. We don't need any storylines going into it. We don't even need the lights turned on in the whole building, because we're not about that. We're not about the pyro and the smoke and stuff. You know, we're about the extreme action in the ring. And give us one night. You don't even have to hire outside the company. You got 26 wrestlers right now that are ECW alumni. And if you let us come together and do ECW style, we are so gonna win over that night, and it's gonna do such good for us that are still us wrestlers that carry the ECW spirit in us. It's gonna be so good for the fans that miss ECW, and it's gonna be good for the whole industry, because it needs some kind of kick in the ass to wake it up.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, because, I mean, you look at that audience that's kind of just gone off, and in this one night, you can bring all of them back. And that's why I find it frustrating. Like, the WWE is really putting their fingerprints now all over this, and it seems like it's become a real political game now. Like, if this ECW pay-per-view outdraws Vengeance, you know, it's almost saying that, you know, well, this company, they've got 4 hours of TV, and here's this outlaw group that's going to outdraw them. Do you feel that the WWE influence is hurting this show right now?
Yes, I do feel that the WWE influence is hurting the show. At the same time, I have no doubt it's going to be a phenomenal success, regardless of those negative energies that are put into it. And also, it's necessary, because ECW did fold. It did fold. If it hadn't folded, I never would have left. I never would have went anywhere else. I loved ECW, the artistic freedom that I had, being the whole fucking show, knowing that I had the freedom to do my part every day, to do what I could to try to back up the show and to make sure that the fans were happy that they bought their ticket. It's really hard in a 2 or 3 minute time slot to feel like you have really done your part, you know, and you feel responsible for all those fans going happy. Now, you know, it's easy now to feel like you're just a part of the show. You know, in ECW, nobody was held back so that the next match could showcase, you know, in a better format. It was all about, you think, you know, you got what it takes. You think, you know, how to reach the crowd and get ahead. Here's your chance. You know what I mean? It was all about that. It's necessary for the WWE to now do this, because ECW did fold and it was gone. And when I reluctantly came to WWE, because it was the thing to do at the time, I didn't know until like the minute, it was the actual day that I was at the arena in Atlanta to make my WWE debut, that I found out we were going to revive ECW and do this invasion for one night. And it was so awesome. I'm going to be, you know, I've got that ECW association, and I'm going to use that, you know, as some leverage, you know, to come in. And I was so pleased with that. And that lasted for, you know, for a minute, whatever. But then now, This much later, I got them to agree to do this pay-per-view. And then the ECW DVD, the sales went through the roof, which I predicted, and I told Vince that they would. And that made them feel a lot more confident about, you know, doing this show. One thing that I'll go on the record stating is this WWE influence is not... it doesn't need to be part of the show. Of course, we need them to put us on the stage because basically...
the promotion's huge that they're going to give to the show.
For sure, and it'll be seen, you know, by more people than it ever has before. And there was no ECW by itself anymore to even do the show on its own. Basically, all the ECW wrestlers that are going to be on there... are WWE wrestlers, except for, you know, some exceptions that we're reaching out for. But storylines, we don't need them. Invasion, we don't need it. Nobody's buying a ticket to see those guys that are coming and do the invasion. They're buying a ticket to see ECW, to see what it's about, you know, and to support what it represents. And these guys coming from Raw and SmackDown to do this invasion thing, which I'm not exactly sure what all that's about, the way I see it, nothing but negative. They're there to, what, soak up some credit for the pay-per-view being a success? What, take a payday, take a big slice of the pie that they don't deserve so that us that put this thing together and that worked our asses off can have a smaller piece of the pie? I totally disagree with everything they're doing there. And after the date, after June 12th, aren't we all WWE wrestlers after that? Why the separation and the heat, you know, dividing the ECWs? Totally not needed. I said give us one night only, just one night to be ECW wrestlers, and that's all we need. So this extra WWE influence that they're throwing in to make it a little less ECW, no, it's not good, but do not be afraid that it's going to ruin the pay-per-view, because the pay-per-view is still going to totally kick ass. It'll just have a little extra part in it, a little extra flavor in it that, you know, some of us aren't going to agree with.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the card, all the matches look awesome on paper. I mean, Benoit Guerrero, how can you go wrong with some of those? I guess it's just the word now that, like, you know, WWE wants their writers in there, and it's just from the TV where they're doing these ECW rules matches where it's, as you said, just the garbage wrestling with the, you know, cane shots and all that, and that wasn't what ECW was.
No, and they never understood what ECW was, and I know that. They never understood why ECW is successful, and I know that. And they also never had the faith that ECW could survive and that it was deserving of any credibility that it got. And that's why they're completely shocked that the DVD sold so well. Their hands are in the air in the office saying, what? This is ECW. That wasn't Armageddon or Judgment Day. What are people buying that for? And they don't even want that to happen. You know, there's so much prejudice in the office. They don't want ECW to succeed. And we've been fighting that all along. And now we've got our big chance right here. We've got it. You know what? All we got to do now is wait for the numbers to come in after the fact. You know, people are going to order this pay-per-view. They're so excited about it. You know, I mean, the feedback I'm getting from everybody makes me personally feel proud since it was my idea. But I'm so happy to see that everyone feels like I do, too. You know, like, we need to see ECW. We need a change from what we've been seeing over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and I mean, the show, I'm very much looking forward to it. Just the fact they're doing the four-camera shoot and making it look like an ECW show, it should be great. For my money, I think this one's going to outdraw Vengeance at the end of the month, clearly. As you said, it's something different that people, they want to see.
That's all ECW was ever about, was showing something different. Showing, giving a choice, giving you an option. Yeah, you can watch that other stuff if you want, but if you want to see what pro wrestling really could be, then watch us. We got the holy shit factor. You turn on ECW, oh my God, these guys are lunatics. They're crazy. What are they doing? It's all heart and dedication, what you're seeing, you know, and it comes out. It comes out that way.
Right. Now, have you heard any news on Joey Styles, if he's going to be involved in this? Because I have a hard time imagining someone else commentating this show.
From my understanding, you don't have to worry about Joey Styles not being part of the show. Best commentator that I've ever had the pleasure of working with. Definitely my favorite guy to ever call any of my matches. And I'm so stoked because it's my understanding that Joey Styles will be calling the ECW pay-per-view.
Oh, well, that's huge then. I always remember that debut of the band Terminator, and you got holy shit right out of him.
First time he actually went that far. Yeah. He named half of my moves when he's commentating the match. I mean, he made it such competition. And even when when there's a 10-minute walk out to the ring, high-fiving everybody, he kept it interesting, you know, by throwing you statistics, and he just made it feel so much like competition that I would actually say that he brought even more fight out of me. And when I would watch my matches back that he commentated on, I would learn the names of some of my moves. I'd be like, you know, he's right. That is a 360-degree leg drop. Yeah, whatever. You know, he would just call it like as it is. And he was, you know, it's like Van Damme with a double springboard drop kick off the guardrail. And I'm, yeah, that is what that is. You know, he's right because he's calling it what it is. He knew so much about his job. It made my job better. It's so much better than when I had to adjust to hearing my matches called by somebody that thought every kick that I did was a Van Damminator with my size 12s.
Now, one guy who won't be working the show is Terry Funk. We just actually talked to him about 2 weeks ago, and he said he had a real problem with Vince now profiting off of ECW, and then he won't be working the show. Have you seen any hesitancy on any of the other wrestlers for that part, that Vince, you know, was someone who could have kept ECW alive and theoretically is, but now he's going to be, you know, pocketing a giant chunk of this pay-per-view?
I haven't heard anybody has a problem with the fact that Vince owns ECW. I mean, come on, he owns wrestling, basically. He pretty much bought up everybody. And if you're in this business and you want to tell people that you've made it or that you're on top, you better be working for Vince. That's just the way it is, you know? He's the king. And just the fact that he's giving us this freedom and that he realizes how much different ECW has to be. He realizes that when we're on the mic during that ECW pay-per-view, we have to shoot from the hip and we have to talk how it really is because that's the way that it was. You know what I mean? We're the ones that started talking about out-of-the-ring stuff, you know, people getting busted last night or people in the hotels doing this or that. I mean, it was like we crossed all the lines, you know, and made it authentic and developed this bond with the fans that will never ever die. And the only hesitancy that I've seen from other wrestlers is at first nobody believed me that it was going to happen. Come on, Spike. I'm just saying, if I got Vince to do this pay-per-view, man, how awesome would that be? Spike Dudley's like, Rob, no, it's never going to happen. That was the hesitancy I got. And then a little later, you know, there's a lot of concern, like you're saying, about, well, how much is it going to be watered down now that it's WWE? And you know what? When you look at it and you look what's coming together and you look at what's going to be on the show and you throw in even some of the stuff on the show that you're hearing about that might not be that good overall, there's just no doubt it's going to totally kick ass. It's going to be totally representative of everything that ECW stood for.
Yeah, I got to admit, seeing you with Fonzie is going to be great, I think. That would be great if he's got the whistle.
I might even pull a Tommy Dreamer and bawl my eyes out in the ring. That's how emotional I think I'll be.
Well, it should be great. Does WWE have the rights to play Pantera? Do you know, theme music situation, what that's going to be like?
Actually, they were working on that as we speak. It was just yesterday that I checked on that, and the request was put in, and I don't have an answer yet because some of the guys are definitely using their old music. Definitely, and that's going to inspire, you know, a lot of excitement out of the crowd. And I felt like, for sure, if I got Fonzie there, I have to come through those curtains to walk. And don't have an answer yet, but I'm hoping so. I'm hoping that I come out either Pantera or Kilgore. I came out, you know, Kilgore redid this song for the last couple of years. That's fine too. I would just like to hear the fans with their respect. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, because I think that would probably be the pop of the night to just see you come out. Hey, you're getting the big, they haven't seen you in 6 months. And second, just, you know, in your environment.
Because that's the way it should be. And I had to kick and scream a little bit over the last few weeks on that, you know, when they came to promoting this pay-per-view. I mean, I'm not going to be cleared by the doctor. I won't have like an actual advertised full match or anything, you know. So basically, all I know for sure that I'll be able to do is to get on the mic and spill my guts out like I'm doing. There's no reason I should do that beforehand and tell you to get the pay-per-view and watch me do it again, you know. But for sure, I will be feeling good enough to kick somebody's ass, and I'm hoping maybe to finish some unsettled business with Rhino. And I'm hoping, you know, to patch up, you know, a little bit of distance that's been there between me and Sabu. And it's going to be an incredible get-together. And honestly, I feel like it's probably going to be a family reunion.
Yeah, it should be great. And, I mean, I'm pretty confident this show is going to do very well. And, I mean, Vince isn't an idiot. If he can make money off this, do you see them doing something with ECW down the road? I mean, with this new deal with USA Network, they're going to have a weekend, one-hour time slot there. And, I mean, has there been any talk of, you know, using ECW to do anything in the future?
You know, I got Vince to agree to do this pay-per-view, and I have no doubt that after this is hugely successful, that we can come back with, at the very least, making this an annual pay-per-view. I have plenty of ideas in my head for some stuff to do in between, some of which I'll probably share, some of which I may not, just to protect bastardizing something that I care so much about. But I definitely see a future in this, and it's gonna take crossing that line June 12th in order to truly be proven. Up until now, we've proven ECW is a force to reckon with, but until the numbers come in for that pay-per-view, there won't be proof that our style and our fans are gonna be shelling out to support, and they're gonna care more about this than they do about at least half of the other pay-per-views. So, you know, like you said, it's all about the money. When the money comes in, Vince is gonna want to do something else with it, and I pray that he doesn't think the numbers are so high because he did this invasion angle, and I hope that the credit goes where it belongs with the ECW.
I was just gonna say, I just hope someone isn't in his ear. If the numbers come up, we'll see. That's because WWE was part of it.
No doubt. There's so many guys in the office that want to see ECW fail. It's funny to talk about that since it's already been folded for like 4 years, mm-hmm. but it's still lived. It's lived through its death. You know what I mean?
Still get chance.
Absolutely. And there's guys in the office that want so bad for it to not succeed for various reasons, mm-hmm. performers, agents, all kinds. So, you know, when this is a huge success, they won't lose face necessarily and say, oh, well, I guess you're right. ECW does do really good, because now they can say, well, sure, it did good. We did this and had SmackDown guys there. So in their mind, maybe they can have some satisfaction, but it's wrong. It's wrong. And when the pie comes out for everybody to take their piece, man, some of us should be getting two pieces, but we're going to have to share with someone that did nothing to make that pie. That's my honest feeling.
So that was Rob Van Dam heading into the One Night Stand show. So now you have a perspective of where his head was at a week prior to the show and the involvement of the WWE and who was going to have the influence on the show. And I think you can look in hindsight a very strong result by the end of the pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
So, Wade, let's get into our feedback right now. We have a handful of feedback over the last couple of days. And we'll start off with the biggest review away fan. Hey guys, love the reviews of Bash at the Beach 96 in this week's Raw. Also, the Jersey Shore review was great. I loved your review and love watching that trashy show. I feel Vinny is a big-time babyface, though, which you didn't mention. Ronnie is extremely likable, though. Think you will realize soon that smushing girls is getting old, whatever that means, and that he has a good thing going for him in Sammy's Sweetheart. The hunt for 2,000 Raw followers has begun. Let's do it.
We received a lot of feedback regarding our Jersey Shore reviews this week.
It's like half and half.
Very mixed, very mixed. Feel free to chime in. We'll get to some of this throughout this segment. Rob King writes, please no more reviews of Jersey Shore. If I wanted to know what was happening on that show, I'd watch it. I listen to RAW for wrestling reviews, not reviews of white trash shows.
Great final line.
Wow.
Scott McCullough, I'm 50-50 on a repeat of the Jersey Shore review. I enjoy the show and don't mind you guys talking about it, but I can see how it drags on after a while, and I'm not sure every episode is reviewable in the same manner. I think you can pretty much say Ronnie and Polly are douchebags and Jay Wow and Snooki are whores. There, review done. I was and still am a huge mark for the original ECW product. The One Night Stand pay-per-view was the last time I had a bunch of guys together at my place for a wrestling pay-per-view. I definitely think the crowd helped out enormously during the show, and another reason the TNA Hardcore Justice pay-per-view will fall below their expectations. I attended two shows at the ECW arena as well as their pay-per-view in Buffalo. They were all experiences I will never forget.
Jay Hunter? Please don't continue reviewing the Jersey Shore. This is a wrestling podcast. Imagine having to listen to me reviewing RAW, then episodes of Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Oh, Raw. Imagine having to listen to me review Raw and then episodes of Always Sunny. You wouldn't appreciate it. If you're going to continue, could you please have the Jersey Shore review after the member feedback so people who don't want to listen can just press stop? Also, you manage the Law, do Review Away, and now do Raw is Way, and adding a TV show review in addition to your weekly job duties, do you think you might be giving yourself too large a workload? Because you can't just enjoy the show, but rather required to take notes. It'd make me resentful. Anyway, keep up the great work, guys.
I actually prefer watching the shows when I have to take notes. I find I pick up a lot more when I'm actively watching.
Yeah, I agree. Otherwise, especially with pro wrestling, if I don't have a reason to watch it closely, I just tune out.
Brandon West writes, ECW One Night Stand was awesome. Every match on the card was great, especially Tanaka versus Awesome. I'm guessing this wasn't your favorite match, John, what with all the chair shots to the head and all the tables being broken. Actually, you know, tables are actually safe.
Yeah.
Like, that's designed
tables
to
are fine.
Actually cushion, like, a fall. Going through a table is really not that dangerous. I also thought Benoit versus... What?
So would you do it?
What, go through a table?
Yeah.
I wouldn't choose to. I'm just saying, if you were to take a bump onto the apron versus going through a table, I think the table would cushion it better.
Yes. No, I'm just
breaks your fall.
Yeah.
It's just basic physics.
I agree.
I also thought Benoit versus Guerrero was good. Probably the last match they had together before Eddie passed away. Overall, there were some good promos from Paul Heyman and RVD, and the matches delivered. Probably one of my favorite WWE-produced pay-per-views.
Mm-hmm. Matt or James, how about calling the Raw review Raw is Way? Simple and to the point, and not as bland as Review of Raw. I don't know. I think we have my name too much in there.
Who cares? Jack Pisco, to Way and Joe Po for show. Listen to the Sunday show. I felt that it was a bit rushed, like a certain wrestling promotion trying to squeeze a 3-hour pay-per-view into a 2-hour TV time slot with commercials. But I will be forgiving, as this was done late at night. Jay and Mouth were all right, considering there were 4 people trying to comment on the bash. Not to sound like a mark, but it felt like a tag team match. Remember those, with Way and Jay finally coming in for the hot tag once in a while. If I choose to watch this again, then I will take Way's advice and watch the opening match and then go to the main event. There was one thing I didn't remember about this, and that was there wasn't a finish for the last match. I thought the Outsiders had pinned Team WCW. If there wasn't an official ending to this, then doesn't that mean the hostile takeover was a failure? Does not compute. I would like to recommend for a future review WCW Capital Combat 1990, which featured RoboCop involved in a Sting Horseman feud.
He's absolutely right. But it wasn't a failure. I don't know.
He said, what would happen if WCW loses this match? And they didn't lose the match.
Yeah, but they didn't win either. William Corliss. Just heard John and Wade joke on Review Away from a few weeks ago, brackets, I'm way behind, that Whippleman's job might be to carry food. I took a road trip to Backlash 2009, and I saw him in the food court at the Providence Mall and was wondering the same thing. What the hell does he do?
Ben Briesbach, if you guys talk about Jersey Shore, you should assume that people have already seen the episode you're talking about and just comment on specific things. I haven't seen that show yet, but I've thought about it. You guys have made it sound okay as a fun time waster of a show. I just don't know if I want to hear, and then this happened, and then this happened. But if I watch the show, it might be funny to hear you guys talking about it. Sort of like a mini The Hills After Show for wrestling fans, dare I say that. Otherwise, I'm really enjoying this show. You guys make 2010 WWE seem a lot more entertaining than it actually is just by picking it apart.
We talked about this following last week's podcast. I think coming off of it, both of us didn't really feel like it went as well as we had hoped. But you had mentioned that, you know, throughout the course of the talking about it, we kind of felt a bit more of a flow going doing the Jersey Shore review.
Yes, rather than doing a
recap. The recap is really not the way to go, we realized. Richard Lee, hey guys, excellent job with having the Mouth and Agnew on the show this week. We saw how one angle can overshadow an entire pay-per-view. As well, we got a great match from Mysterio and Psychosis, and Dusty putting plunder into the wrestling vocabulary. Now on to your Raw review. Please, no Jersey Shore. To paraphrase the great Bill Hicks, the greatest comedian ever, seeing that show makes me pray
for nuclear holocaust in 5 seconds. Not sounding too shallow, Richard Lee.
Travers Cummings. Hey, guys, I definitely think you guys should do the Jersey Shore review every week. I never watched the first season, but decided to watch it after you said you were going to review it. I know it's supposed to be a wrestling-themed show, but it wouldn't hurt to just take 10 to 15 minutes to review one of the most popular shows on TV right now, especially since you both enjoy it. Hearing you talk about heels and faces in conjunction with that show is great. I agree Angelina is going for a huge babyface turn. What I think is going to happen is Ronnie and Sammy will get back together, and then Angelina is going to tell Sammy about all the shit he was doing at the bars with the other girls. From some of the preview clips, JWoww is in for a heel turn as it looked like she will comfort Ronnie when Sammy breaks up with him again, setting up a Sammy-JWoww feud. Also, a lot of the vocabulary can be useful for the listeners of this show. It's probably not a coincidence that about 95% of the people that post on here are all guys. You might be doing some of the dudes on here a favor in hooking up with ladies. Whenever the terms landmine, grenade, grenade launcher, and double bag are bounced around, they will know exactly what they are talking about.
It's fun for me to try to apply wrestling mindsets to other things in life.
Of course.
What wrestling, pro wrestling really is, it's just it's a TV show. It's storytelling, and you can apply that to anything. You can apply it to movies. You can apply it to
It's just to establishing
politics.
Characters. It's
yeah.
just very similar.
Exactly. Mike Ginge Green. Hey guys, I just heard the review away with my feedback on it. In my defense, Facebook didn't let me go that far back as to check the Prince Albert thing and had already been answered.
That's not your fault. That's ours for not scanning through mail.
I guess Facebook had been a bit screwy that day. Also, this shows how stupid I can be at times. I meant to say long-time listener, first-time caller, which I realize is still not as funny as I originally thought, but whatever. As for the name, it's simply because I have ginger hair, and Ginge is something of a slur against gingers that I've taken back. Also, I bet you've never said the term daft racist before, eh? Love the reviews again this week, guys. Keep up the good work. 2000, here we come.
Dan Danielson, I'll second Richard Lee. No more Jersey Shore, please. I will admit I had a real good laugh listening to John and Wade talk about the show in wrestling terms, but the novelty of that style of reviewing a non-wrestling show won't last.
Oh, Ahmad. Hey, Wayne and John, I love the show. I have a job and an internship that require an hour-long commute, so the review aways and laws really make the time go. First and foremost, please, please continue doing the Jersey Shore reviews.
We're so torn.
The show is addictive and so fucking entertainingly stupid that it requires your two's thoughts and snarky remarks. Concerning Bash at the Beach 96, I'm reminded that even prior to Russo, WCW was garbage with a couple piles of diamonds in the rough. Cruiserweights and the NWO angle. I just rewatched One Night Stand 05 and came to the conclusion about ECW. That was fun, but who cares? The crowd was insane and the Jericho Storm match was great, but so many fucking run-ins. You could never get into a match because I knew there was going to be some bullshit finish. Ugh, fuck ECW and TNA and WWE. Long live the situation.
Dennis Newman writes, I love listening to Review Away. I would like to suggest you review SummerSlam 2003. The reason I'm writing this email is because of something you said about the China video. When John and yourself were talking about whether or not talking about the porn video, you said you did not feel comfortable reviewing a porn video with a bunch of guys. I flash back to something I did in my younger days. My friends got together to watch a porn video. At first, it was kind of weird, but it soon got awkward. My friend decided that he had to get up and started walking with a limp. Everyone started to make fun of him, but he claimed that his leg had fallen asleep. I was so freaked out, I got out of there immediately. Never again. Thanks for sharing that.
I thought that was crazy. Thor. Pissed.
I have That's a like, psst, not pissed.
Okay. Psst. I have a proposition for you. I will give you Vladimir the Superfan's email address, provided that first, Wei Ting get the Killer Khan haircut, and provided also that you start taking my goddamn feedback. These are but small sacrifices when you consider the importance of making your audience happy. Hulkamaniac forever, Thor. P.S. I get you his full name also.
That sounds illegal. This guy's nuts. Jack Pisco, hey guys, keep on reviewing Jersey Shore. Personally, I like the application of wrestling logic and psychology to everyday situations or MTV reality shows. The addition of the chili tweets to your Raw review is just comedy gold.
Craig Slanger. Sorry if this has already been mentioned as I just listened to the podcast, but the WWE has actually edited out Heenan's "Yeah, but whose side is he on" line, along with Dusty's response out of most of the times I've seen the clip in documentaries like Rise and Fall of WCW and others.
Tony Sackage, the Jersey Shore review was funny because you compared it to wrestling, but it wasn't anything I hope to hear in the future. You should just review different TV shows weekly.
I don't know about that. Justin Foe, looking forward to your ECW One Night Stand review. I rewatched it a couple months back before TNA got their master plan to try and revive the concept, and I must say, it was a very enjoyable show. Although there is some garbage, there are also some quality wrestling matches on there from the likes of Storm, Jericho, Benoit, and Guerrero. I look forward to a John Pollock rant on the Mike Awesome Masato Tanaka match regarding unprotected chair shots. Don't disappoint.
And finally, Nate Milton. Listening to a review of Raw, is Chili the most amazing female to ever walk the earth? Rib sandwich is now in my everyday vocabulary. Thank you, Sister Rosanda. And she probably knows Charles Robinson from his days in WCW. As a fellow Atlantean, I know how well-loved the NWA WCW was in the South. Mm. Keep up the good work, gentlemen. So thanks to everybody for your feedback. You can always go post it on reviewaway.com. That's reviewaway.com. Or just type in Live Audio Wrestling's Review Away group on Facebook. So, Wade, now we look ahead to next week, and we will get back into us rotating selections for reviews. It is the summer season, so I'm curious what you have planned for next week's edition of Review Away.
Well, I really enjoyed our build to WrestleMania when we kept doing a bunch of WrestleManias in a row. And seeing as it's SummerSlam in a couple weeks, I'd like to get back into that. And why don't we do a show? Why don't we do the one that was actually in Toronto? Like, did you attend?
Yes, actually. Mouth, Jay, and I all attended that show.
Oh, okay. Yep. Fantastic. Well, SummerSlam 2004. Featuring the main event of Randy Orton versus Chris Benoit.
Thanks, Way. So that will be our review for next week in front of Bizarro World in Toronto. If I'm not mistaken, that was the first show that the Bizarro World name was officially christened via Vince McMahon over Jim Ross's headphones. Yeah. So that'll be our review for next week. SummerSlam hits Toronto. And, of course, everyone, don't forget to tune back to reviewaway.com, reviewaway.com. Tuesdays we review Raw, and sometimes we chat about some other shows as well. And we'll also be getting to your feedback. And then next week, it's SummerSlam 2004. So as we go out here, Way, I'm just trying to think of a song. And I actually think, rather than a song, obviously everyone was kind of focused on UFC 117 this past weekend. I thought we would look at Chael Sonnen, and in this following set of clips, he really gives you the definition of a true heel.
A lot of people took offense to what you said about Lance Armstrong recently, to Larry Pepe. Can you elaborate on that?
I never did an interview with Larry Pepe.
Chael Sonnen, welcome back to Pro MMA Radio.
Hey, Larry. Great to be here, buddy.
The Lance Armstrong stuff you never said?
I've never spoke of Lance Armstrong ever.
Of Lance Armstrong?
Never. Not until just
now. You know, take Lance Armstrong. Lance Armstrong did a number of things, and he gave himself cancer. Okay? Lance Armstrong cheated. He did drugs. He gave himself cancer. Well, instead of saying, hey, listen, I cheated. Nobody else should cheat or you could get cancer, he actually made himself the victim and then went out and profited like $15 million from this, hey, poor me campaign. Let's find a cure for cancer. Instead of really just coming clean and saying, look, here's what I did. I screwed myself up. And I hope nobody else doesn't learn from my mistake. So, you know, you watch these guys and you go, God, what a fraud. There's just fraud after fraud here, you know, from Michael Phelps being the pothead to, you know, you just got to deal with these things. And if you're me, you're glad you're in the business you're in where you can get them in the cage and kick the crap out of them for 25 minutes.
Chael Sonnen joining us on the program. So, Chael, what happened? Did you or did you not make the statement that Lance Armstrong gave himself cancer?
I did not, and Lance Armstrong called me about that. We are teammates on the Nike team together. I work out in the Lance Armstrong building 3 days a week at the Nike campus, the world headquarters of Beaverton, Oregon. I have never spoke of Lance Armstrong or anybody else that doesn't have a contract in the middleweight division with the UFC.
So what did Lance Armstrong say to you when he called you?
He said, I heard your interview. What are you saying about me? I said, well, that was the first I heard about it.
he broke the story for me. I thought he was kidding, and I didn't even think it was him. I've only talked to him on the phone a couple of times. I didn't really know what was going on. He blindsided me, and now you're the third person to bring it up. Somebody asked me about it yesterday too, but I assure you, Jim, you will not see any footage of any such interview, complimentary or derogatory, on that topic.
Joe, there's actually, though, audio on the internet of, if it's not you, it's somebody saying it. Is it not you who made the statement?
Look, it's not me. There's five MySpace pages for me. They're not me. There's five Facebooks and there's two Twitter accounts. And I'm not even on the internet on a daily basis. So I can't say it any clearer. I told Lance I made peace with him yesterday. That's not me.
Yeah, let me ask you something. For instance, I know what you mean when you say there's five MySpace pages. Even I've got those imposter MySpace pages. But there's a link of audio that went through Yahoo. I mean, I could play this for you. Can you tell me if I play this for you that this is not you?
Yeah, absolutely. You could play it for me.
Let me play it for you, Chael. Go ahead.
When you screw up and you somehow, you know, take Lance Armstrong. Lance Armstrong did a number of things, and he gave himself cancer. Okay, Lance Armstrong cheated. He did drugs. He gave himself cancer. Well, instead of saying, hey, listen, I cheated, nobody else should cheat or you could get cancer, he actually made himself the victim and then went out and profited like $15 million
Chael, I could be wrong. That sounds a lot like you.
Jim, that doesn't sound anything like me. Have the callers call in. There's no way anybody will think that sounds like me.
Chael, honestly, because, I mean, respectfully, it sounds exactly like you.
Sounds like a guy with a Hispanic accent to me. Maybe I had a bad connection, but I thought you were kidding around with that voiceover. That's certainly not me.
All right, so you're telling me that's not you, Chael.
I can't say it to you any clearer, brother.
Okay.